You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, and our planet, and everything regarding our collective existence. I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living, and you can hear this show and all past shows of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com. Today, I am very excited because we're going to be speaking about autism, and specifically getting into varied treatments for autism and what's really happening on the front edge autism treatment today. I want to begin briefly just that past weekend there were articles both in the San Francisco Chronicle and on the front page of USA Today about the increasing incidences of autism, and the article mentioned that 1 in 150 U.S. kids are now showing some signs of autism, and they're calling this a major public health concern, urgent public health issue, the article states. They also go on to say that it is a poorly understood behavioral disorder and that the survey by the Center for Disease Control offers no clues to what causes autism and also shedded no light on the controversial claim that trace amounts of mercury in vaccines may be in some way connected to the increase in autism rates. So today, in the studio, we have an autism panel, and there's three individuals here with me. I'm going to introduce them now. Well, firstly, Dr. Elisa Song is here. She's with Whole Child Wellness down in Belmont in the Peninsula. She's a medical doctor specializing in pediatrics and is board certified with the American Board of Pediatrics and the American Board of Holistic Medicine. She integrates conventional pediatrics with holistic nutrition, herbal medicine, homeopathy, and Chinese traditional medicine as well. Welcome, Elisa. Dr. David Traver is here. He's a board-certified pediatrician and fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. He's attended national conferences and training programs focused on a biomedical approach and has spoken at seminars and parent support groups on the assessment and treatment of autistic spectrum disorders. He now adopts the biomedical approach as the first-line treatment for autistic spectrum disorders. And also on our panel is Julie Matthews, co-host of Reality Sandwich and certified nutritional consultant, who for the past 5 years has been working in conjunction with families of children with autism and in collaboration with varied medical practitioners assisting parents in the treatment of their children with dietary and supplemental interventions. Following on with this article that's been out in mainstream media, major topic of autism out there, and for myself as a observer of all of this, really feeling a lack of directed, applicable information that that parents can use to navigate and find some way of directing some treatment for their kids. I really want to begin asking the three of you just briefly, how have you happened to be focusing your practices now on autism and specifically a holistic approach? Because there are several major paradigms and methods of looking at autism. One is a very strictly Western medical approach that we're seeing, looking at autism as strictly a behavioral disorder. And then there is a broader, more holistic approach that's taking into account the tremendous consistencies that are being seen amongst these children in their physiology and their biology and their biochemistry. So just briefly first, let's begin with Elisa. How have you come to be focused on autism now?
So really my quest to have a better way to treat kids has brought me to this holistic way of treating kids with autism, becoming increasingly frustrated with Western pediatrics and really just having tools to put band-aids on symptoms. That led me to trying to find the root cause of illnesses using homeopathy, Chinese medicine, and something called functional medicine, which is a way of looking at how everything we put into our bodies, whether it's the food we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink, even the thoughts that we have, how all of those interact with our own unique genetic biochemical makeup and manifest as symptoms of illness or wellness. And then looking at the biomedical approach to autism really was a natural offshoot of functional medicine and all the work that I'd been doing before. So it just got me really excited to know that there were other possibilities to treat and really heal kids with autism.
Thank you. Dr. Traver, you're a pediatrician. How have you arrived?
Well, My journey actually started when I was approached by some friends of mine who have some special needs children to pursue this as a specialty, as it were. I was somewhat skeptical when they invited me to go to one of these conferences where certainly not a non-mainstream approach was espoused. I actually decided to do what I call a fork in the road, where I went to Stanford and studied under the neuropsych PDD department and assessed children for autistic spectrum disorders, and wanted to see what treatments mainstream had to offer. Not unlike Dr. Song, I became increasingly discouraged by not only the narrow spectrum of the narrow bandwidth that we could offer these patients, but the relatively poor benefit they received. And I think it's a very safe thing to say that I discovered that we had an unhealthy reliance on marginally effective agents. And essentially, after I did that, as I sidetracked into these biomedical protocols, it became increasingly apparent that these were not only at least as effective, but likely more beneficial to the individual patients, not only in terms of what they offer, but the side effects are much less. And that's something that we all need.
Thanks for being here today on the panel. And Julie, as a certified nutrition consultant, how have you come to be focused on autism in your practice?
Well, I started doing research when I was in school on just the fact that we fed our kids such terrible food these days, and that there had to be some connection with, originally I was studying ADD and ADHD, and then quickly noticed the connection and similarity and underlying causes with autism, and pretty much became hooked at that point, realizing that there was so much information out there that made where supplementation and diet played a huge part in this, that I was sort of hooked after that, and have met Dr. Traver at my first DAN conference probably 5+ years ago, and have been fascinated ever since.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Dr. Song, Dr. Traver, and Julie Matthews for being here on this holistic panel today. Let me just begin with this question. Is autism genetic, or is there some environmental things going on here? What's causing all these numbers?
I would say that autism really is a byproduct of how the children's unique environmental influences interacts with their unique genetic makeup. So it really is a combination of both, because we can have kids who are the same exact environmental influences, even in the same family, and one child may be autistic, another child may not be. So really it's this interplay, and there's never one single cause. And to also touch upon what Julie had mentioned, starting off with ADD in her quest for really healing kids, there really is this idea that this biomedical approach will be helpful to not just kids with autism, but to a whole range of kids who have neurologic and other behavioral issues like ADD, like Down syndrome, like epilepsy, other neurologic issues. So really keeping a broader perspective that these neurologic issues are a huge part of what we are seeing in our kids today, and broadening our minds to how we can really help these kids.
Yeah, I'd like to touch on that as well, is that, you know, it's they kind of, in some cases, call these psychological disorders, or in some cases, neurological conditions. But in my opinion, or my understanding, that's really a biochemical imbalance that's affecting the neurological system. So we can affect the biology or the biochemistry in that same way by positively influencing it. It's not just this elusive world of, quote, psychological disorders where there's nothing that we can do.
I'll add to that, and I think that's a wonderful statement, Julie. I will – one thing that helped – I don't know what the words validate, but reinforce my entry into this arena was were some mainstream medical models, one of them being that of PKU, which is an unfortunate condition that can arise when children lack certain enzymes or cofactors to process a certain amino acid that all of us can ingest. And when that happens, to make a long story very short, it can result in, unfortunately, mental retardation, certainly behavioral abnormalities. To understand that about 10 or so conditions like this are predominantly conditions in which autistic behavior has been noted and are primarily characterized as metabolic disorders is a huge concept for us to understand, so that we don't, as Julie has mentioned, limit this quote-unquote condition to a psychological cage.
But hasn't that been the case in the mainstream? I mean, it hasn't. Isn't the mainstream interpretation of autism that it is a neurological disorder,
or rather a psychological disorder,
and that the primary mode of treatment is behavioral?
That
is to work with the with this assumed notion that there is a neurological problem, and that behavioral intervention is the only way to go.
Unfortunately, that's true, and I think part of that is because behavioral manifestations are the first sign that something is going awry in their children, that and or language deficits. Parents often do describe GI issues and other system abnormalities, but many times pediatricians are very quick to pass this off as something we call toddler's diarrhea or some other, perhaps intercurrent viral illness that clearly has not been substantiated in this population.
Mm.
I think one of the problems that you're bringing up, Martin, is this whole separation of systems that we have in Western medicine. The idea that we have a specialist for the brain, we have a specialist for the gut, we have a specialist for the endocrine system, a specialist for the immune system. There is nobody putting the whole picture together. And our bodies work as a unit. They are not individual systems that work in isolation. So one dysfunction or problem in one area will have overflow effects in other areas. And that's why this biomedical approach, the holistic approach, offers so much more for these kids, because you can really see how this neuroendocrine immune gut axis affects the whole functioning of these children's bodies and minds all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think understanding the biochemistry and the pathophysiology of what is going on as more and more research comes out is going to be key to understanding where the imbalances are for these kids and understanding what supplementations and or medications would be helpful.
Right. Now, we're hearing from the mainstream and mainstream doctors and even friends and family on the patient side, physician side, that there isn't clinical research yet. We talked about clinical research here, right? That the diet and or natural treatments or holistic approaches, supplementation, are not yet fully substantive, and perhaps that's why they're not being integrated into the broader mainstream. What do you say to people that think that?
Well, I have a first comment. People that say that there's no research haven't read the research, because there's tons of research. There's all sorts of pieces of this biochemical pathway that we found in autism, or this nutrient deficiency that we found in autism, or that when you have all sorts of these little pieces, tons and tons of research. Now, we certainly have to put that together in the big picture, and I think part of the thing is that often mainstream medicine looks for this one cause, causes autism, and as we'll get a lot into today, it's not that simple. There are a lot of different things. Everybody's individual, and there's a lot of different ways that someone can come up with this imbalance and a lot of different ways to rebalance the body depending on the individual.
I'd have to agree that the research is out there, and there is a wealth of current research and also ongoing research, so we will know more and more. They may not necessarily be in JAMA or the New England Journal of Medicine, although there are articles there if you look. Probiotics are a one area where there has been a substantial amount of research, especially for kids with eczema, atopic illnesses. And so if you look, it's there. Also, if you look at some of the more specialized journals, like the biochemistry journals and neuroscience journals, where many mainstream physicians may not be looking, but you need to look in the right places and you'll find the evidence to really back up the work that we are all trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that, what Dr. Song and Julie have mentioned, because I just recently in the American Academy of Pediatrics journals have appeared a number of articles involving not only probiotics but other natural remedies or natural and alternative therapies. It is undeniable that the American public does not just want to keep taking drugs at large. And I think that people, although they're not scientists nor are they physicians, have a visceral understanding that we shouldn't just keep ingesting synthetic substances as the one pill cures all. So I'm gratified to see these in the literature. And as a kind of a chaser to Dr. Song's comments, I will say that it is appearing more and more in the mainstream literature. And unfortunately, what we're really encountering is a lot of doctors do not know about this, and they don't really. Perhaps they don't have the time, nor do they have the interest at large to look into this. But it is in the journals, and it continues to increase its presence.
I just want to make one little comment. If people are right now at their computer, they can actually go to my website and just see a few of the articles that I pulled together. If you go to healthfulliving.org/autism, you'll see just some of the ones that I pulled together just to kind of get you started.
Well, let's elucidate this a bit for people, because I really do want to get into the scientific and biochemical components of autism. But just before we do, let's get a broader picture and understanding of this disorder, because we were saying that it's not simply a psychological disorder, that there's many physical symptoms that these children have that are in common that affect their brains and their body. I think, Dr. Song, you mentioned earlier neurologic and biomedical consistencies that we're seeing here. So can you please describe some of these other physical symptoms and what different systems in the body are being affected here?
One of the things that I see over and over again is our kids with autism who also have significant or severe eczema and allergies of different sorts. Clearly, there's an imbalance in the immune regulatory system. Excuse me. The T helper 1, T helper 2 cascades of the immune system are typically very imbalanced in kids with autism. And that's why we can see such significant eczema. So that's one skin manifestation. Another really very, very common manifestation is the gut manifestations that Julie and Dave will talk about as well. But most of these kids will have severe abdominal pain. And when you look, you can see signs of severe inflammation, colitis, inflammatory bowel disease. And that comes from somewhere. And again, there's probably a component of an immune dysregulation, as well as possible viral or other infectious etiologies there. Many of these kids have significant sleep issues, hormonal imbalances with thyroid problems, adrenal problems. So there's this dysregulation, imbalance throughout all of the systems in our body. And so really taking a look at each of those is very important rather than just looking at what's going on psychologically and neurologically.
Hmm. Now, Dr. Traver, your practice is exclusively autism?
Correct. It actually embraces the autistic spectrum, mm-hmm. which includes, as of recent, anything from ADD, ADHD, Asperger's, high-functioning autism, the distinction there being a DSM-4 concept of language acquisition by 3 years of age, PDD-NOS, not otherwise specified, Rett syndrome, childhood disintegrative disorder, and then, frankly, a 299.00 autism disorder that people will see on their diagnostic sheets.
Mm-hmm. So what are you noticing as far as consistencies in the bodily systems affected amongst your patients?
Well, I validate Dr. Song's observations. It's undeniably clear that these children have multi-system involvement. In addition to what she mentioned, and she actually touched on this, is the fact that a number of these children, though not all, have some expression of immunodeficiency. They often have multiple ear infections, sinusitis, upper respiratory infections, often viral, but can evolve into bacterial infections as well. And there seems to be a subset that are more susceptible to this. Clearly not all fit into this category, but that, in addition to the inflammation in the gut and the either constipation and or diarrhea, oftentimes we see the gut perhaps being the root for poor growth. And a number of these children, again, not all, seem to suffer from really the fact that they cannot put on weight. The parents are very frustrated at this. Of course, being a mother or father, it's concerning when your child just doesn't grow. And some of these children are even on growth hormone and have been considered for that by their primary pediatricians.
Mm. And then, Julie, I guess you're not necessarily a doctor, but you've been on the front lines with so many parents and you're hearing so many stories. And are you hearing these kind of stories as well?
Well, absolutely. I think I'll just give a story since Dr. Song and Dr. Traver already illuminated many, many of them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of, I hear stories from parents who will say, oh, well, my doctor says, boy, your child was dealt a bad deck of cards. They have autism and gut issues, and they're not putting them all together. And so really the importance of putting them all together and understanding how the biochemical piece relates to all of these different systems is what we're all here trying to do.
And now you've all mentioned that there's definitely some sort of a trigger as well, that there's something happens environmentally that affects these systems being knocked out of whack in their body. So what are some of the environmental assaults that are occurring here?
So this goes back to the functional medicine piece that I had mentioned earlier, where it really is this interaction with our environmental influences and our own individual genetic makeup. And for kids with autism and really kids with any chronic illness, there are many different triggers. There's never just one trigger. Some of these triggers can include antibiotics. Of course, many of these kids, as Dr. Traver mentioned, are on multiple courses of antibiotics for ear infections, for bronchitis, for pneumonia. And so antibiotics can play a role in terms of disrupting the gut and immune function. Various environmental toxins. We are exposed every day to different toxins, car pollution, pesticides in our food, heavy metals in our drinking water, different heavy metals in the medications we give to kids, even some vaccinations can all play a role. So one thing that I'd like to tell parents is that we cannot protect our kids from every single environmental assault, every single environmental toxin. We can do our best to minimize these, though. And so educating yourself on what you can do to minimize. In our cosmetics, there's lots of different toxins. And knowing that our body is designed to filter out these toxins. For some kids and for some adults, these filters are working a little bit slower, so they're not as good at processing the junk. And so for these kids with autism who do have slower filters, really trying to minimize these toxins can have a great impact.
One of the things that we didn't mention in the body systems earlier was the detoxification piece. And a lot of these kids we see over and over again have really poor detoxification capability and a lot of toxins accumulated. And so we then see the picture come all the way around to, are these toxins also creating some of the disordered chemistry? And so it becomes this big cycle of the toxins causing problems and then not being able to detoxify the toxins. So that's one of the biggest things, I think. We have a very, very toxic world, but fortunately many of us have good systems that can process it. And so the question of, well, why don't all kids that have vaccinations all end up with autism? Well, they don't all have disordered detoxification function.
One of the more sobering fields of research has been that involving prenatal exposure by the woman, by the mother. And as much as we don't want to think about this, an ounce of prevention is worth a ton of cure. And just to review some, very quickly mention some of the centers that have been doing research in this. Dr. Paul Patterson at Caltech down in Pasadena has substantially investigated this and with schizophrenia, but it seems that a number of children on the autistic spectrum may have been exposed to viral immune responses that the mother's body generated to protect her own self, and obviously unwittingly may have cross-reacted with the baby's brain, the fetal brain, and may be a setup. We have evidence out of Johns Hopkins and Duke University that terbutaline, an agent that is used to arrest labor in premature contractions for women, is now involved and implicated in autism, as well as chlorpyrifos, which is a pesticide. This opens up the whole Pandora's box of pesticides. Multiple studies that validate that as an agent to be concerned about. And finally, Mount Sinai has just issued studies about lead. And as most pediatricians know intellectually, there is no safe blood level for lead. Even though in California, too, we typically screen for 10 micrograms per deciliter, it clearly there is no level from which we are now exonerated as being safe. And so I think that we have to put our minds to work. As Dr. Song has said, we can't take out everything, but it's something to think about.
Right.
Just to really touch on this issue of toxins, which is so important for all of us, and especially for our kids with autism, as Dave mentioned, there is lots and lots of evidence on the harmful effects, neurologic effects, other harmful effects of different individual toxins like lead, mercury, pesticides. What we don't have good evidence for is what these combinations of toxins can do, and that is what is very frightening for me, because we don't know what the synergistic effects of some of these chemicals and toxic exposures can do. There was one study that came out last year that looked at the combination of lead and mercury. Mm-hmm. What they did was they took the LD1, which is a lethal dose that would kill 1 in 100 rats of lead, and the LD1 of mercury, put that together and injected that into rats, and that combined to create the LD100, or the lethal dose that killed every single rat into which that was injected.
Wow.
So it becomes very synergistic, and so we really need to think about what these combinations are doing, and unfortunately there's no way to test the billions of combinations possible. The other exposure that we don't think about are the exposures that we unknowingly do to our kids when we try to help them when they have fevers or when they're in pain, and we give them Tylenol. Tylenol is one medication that I strongly urge parents to really remove from their closets if they can. What Tylenol does is deplete a substance called glutathione in the body, and as Julie mentioned, detoxification pathways, which are slowed down in some kids, are made worse by depleting this very crucial chemical called glutathione for our detoxification purposes.
You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco Reality Sandwich. Today we're here with a holistic panel discussing autism treatment. As we move into the second half of the show, let's just drill right down here. What we've been talking about, challenges of detoxification, environmental potential implications with these children. What's the, in your opinion, the first stop on the intervention track?
I want to say diet, because that's what I do every day, and I've heard lots of people speak, but I would rather hear from the two expert physicians over here.
Well, Julie, you definitely know that you do diet, and you assist people with diet for autism, but I've heard some comments recently that there's no research on this. There's no research on diet and autism, and that diet doesn't affect autism. However, we know that there's a connection between the gut and the brain. You've been speaking about this now. Can you comment a bit more about this gut brain connection, and I'd like to ask the doctors that one.
Sure. There actually is an intimate connection between the gut and the brain. The gut has been called the second brain. Mm-hmm. And really, when we think about what our gut is our largest opening to the world. We are one big tube, and our insides that we consider our insides, our GI tract, is really part of our external exposure. And so everything we put into our mouth gets through our GI tract and then gets absorbed into our bodies. When we think about the gut-brain axis, we have to remember that many of the same chemicals that affect our brain are actually found in the gut. So about 70 to 80% of serotonin is actually found or made in the gut. Mm. Now, most people know serotonin as something that's implicated in depression. So Prozac, Zoloft, these are drugs that affect serotonin. Now, when we look at serotonin is also linked, though, to food cravings, different manifestations in the GI tract. And so if we can alter the health of the GI tract, we can also alter the chemistry of the brain and really improve that. So I agree with Julie. Diet is very, very key. When we're thinking about what the first stop is in terms of treatment for autism, it's really hard to say because, again, what we all practice here is a really individualized approach. There's no cookie-cutter model. There's no protocol. People will call it the Dan protocol. It really is a Dan approach. There's no one-size-fits-all. So when you have a child in the office, yes, diet will almost always be one of the first things that you look at and address. But then depending on what other issues are really the most prevalent and the most harmful for each child, you might attack that first. If eczema and inflammation is the biggest issue, we might address that first. For many of these kids, the gut is disordered, and I do believe when the gut is disordered, that has to be one of the first stops. Because the gut, again, if you're not absorbing these nutrients to gain weight, to have adequate calories, to absorb the nutrients that your body needs to heal and for every single one of its biochemical processes, you are never going to get well. So again, a targeted approach, but typically focusing first on the gut and nutrition.
So clearly there's a distinction between treating autism and treating a particular patient, given your example there. And just to clarify, you mentioned a Dan approach. We're referring to the Defeat Autism Now organization, which is an extension of the Autism Research Institute, and folks can look it up online.
Well, I think Julie's too modest, and I think that I'll say it since she doesn't want to. I think the diet is foundational. I think to try to do all the other fancy bells and whistles and shots and injections and chelation and you know, detoxification, this and that. That's all nice, and I think that you can establish some sort of effective benefit in some regard. But I think to ignore diet is basically ignoring the foundation on which most of this has to occur. Without proper nutritional repletion and balance, you are going to chase your tail to some extent, in depending on the child's biochemistry and makeup. So I will go ahead and say it, since Julie doesn't want to. I think diet is the first stop for me. I'm not a dietitian. I'm a nutritionist, as Julie's background affords her, but I know enough to, as an MD, to that I had to be taught, since I would safely speak for myself and probably for Dr. Song, the amount of nutrition we received in medical school was pathetic, and most doctors come out with virtually no nutritional background at all, which may be shocking to most people, but that's the case. And I think that from what I've learned, it's very important, and then we build on that.
How does diet affect autism?
Well, I'll just give you a couple examples. So for one, opiates. So for a variety of reasons, some known and some unknown, we know that kids on the autistic spectrum often have high levels of opiates, and they actually take certain proteins found in wheat and gluten and milk and actually convert them in their body to opiates. So can you imagine how your brain would be affected if you were on morphine all day, how you wouldn't be able to think or learn very well, or you might be irritable? That's just one example. There's also a substance called phenols, and phenols, as Dr. Ben Feingold in San Francisco did some research, found that these chemicals, when not processed properly or detoxified properly, build up and can cross the brain blood-brain barrier and, as he says, quote, act like drugs on the brain. So that's just another example. And those things include like artificial ingredients and artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, as well as some natural occurring foods. And, of course, oxalates and phytates and lectins that are on the outside of certain things like grains and beans, they can start adding inflammation to the gut, and they can start creating a whole cascade of digestive inflammatory problems. So those are just kind of a few examples of how diet directly relates to the brain as well as other body systems that we've been talking about today.
So you're describing this whole cycle here that's of dysbiosis in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, inflammation, food sensitivities, yeast, other implications, and I know from my previous discussions on this subject with you, Julie, that the topic of probiotics has come up. Mm-hmm. We talk quite a bit about probiotics for digestive disturbances. And is that something that people can just do? Or can you just go to Whole Foods and get probiotics and help to serve the gut in some way? Is that
right? Well, let me answer the first part of that question, and I think Dr. Traver has even more scientific things to add to it. There's a couple things you can get probiotics in food form. Things like yogurt is the most common one, but a lot of these kids on the spectrum, they can't do milk, so that might not be a good option for them. But we can make all sorts of things from things called kombucha. There's beet kvass. There's fermented vegetables, raw sauerkrauts, things like that. All of those have actually large amounts of naturally occurring bacteria, these, quote, probiotics that you're mentioning right here.
Good bacteria.
Correct. That can do a lot of good to help rebalance this gut problem, help to reduce some of the inflammation, help with immune function. Good bacteria is really essential. And I know that Dave has been doing a lot of work and is going to be doing more work into probiotics and supplemental probiotics. So maybe, Dr. Traver, you can talk about that some.
I think it's everything. I'll validate everything you shared, Julie. I think that most people are very they're very much on the fringe with this issue, because I think they see it at some of the natural health food stores, some of the different markets they may visit, but they don't know whether to go after these or not. You know, you look at the back of these labels, and one says 750 million, and another will say 1 or 2 billion, and, you know, we don't even know how many zeros that is for most of our lives. And so we think, my gosh, I don't know if I should put this much into my body. Well, the bottom line is that by the time you reach the lower part of your colon, and you probably have trillions of these in your body and in parts of your bowels. And I think that although it's not a popular subject, this is something that can influence our digestive habits, and we don't want the first sign of bowel conditions to be blood that comes out of our body. We want to hopefully do something about that before that occurs, and that includes not only kids on the spectrum but adults as well. So, in answer to Martin's question, yes, we can do something something about this, I strongly suggest that most people put probiotics on board, and they can do this with a variety of different agents. But most of the things that we have on the market are unfortunately very weak and are ineffective, in my opinion. And if you look at the Italians, if you look at the French, they are way, way out in front of the Americans, and they supplement in the order of 200 to 400 billion a day. A lot of this is lost in the gastric shower, acid shower of the stomach, so we have to keep that in mind. Some products are better than others, and you can refer to some of these. You know, when you go to some of these websites for autism, you'll find out that there are some of the more specialty product lines that you can access that may be more beneficial than the things you buy over the shelf.
I'd like to move right along because you both have mentioned the toxins, the role of toxins, the need to detoxify the body, and the role that plays in autism. So can we just talk a little bit about the about detoxification, about the both pharmaceutical perspective as well as a broader holistic perspective to treating the body?
So again, in thinking about detoxification, we have three main filters in our body. Of course, many more, but three main. And those are the liver, our kidneys, and our lymphatic system. These are the main organ systems that will drain toxins out of our body that we absorb. And so, again, as we mentioned, detoxification processes can be slower in some people, in some kids, and especially with kids with autism, where their bodies are holding on to these toxins, not letting go as well. So one analogy for parents to think about to try to make it a little bit easier is to think of these filters as the garbage disposal in our sinks that are running at a certain speed. We can't make it run any faster than it is. For these kids with autism, many of them, their garbage disposals are running at a much slower speed. We're still putting in the garbage at the same rate, maybe even an increased rate for some parents who don't know yet about the different toxins that can affect their kids. At a certain point, these toxic exposures will overflow. The garbage disposal will overflow back up into the sink. And that backup of toxins will accumulate in different parts of the body, whether it's the brain or the thyroid or the adrenal glands or the lungs, and then manifest as the different symptoms that we see in autism, the neurological behavioral issues, the gut problems, the thyroid problems. So allowing these filters to work at a faster rate or a better rate is key. There's many, many different ways to do it. And I'll let Dave talk about some of the medical ways that we can do it and some of the nutritional supplements that I and Julie use as well. Some of the things that I use to try to help are also homeopathic medications, homeopathic remedies that are designed to maximize the efficiency of the filters. And there are a few lines called Picana and Unda drops that can really help to not add different substances to the body, but allow the body to do what it really wants to do more naturally. When we add these Picana or Unda drops to the detoxification regimen, what I find is that the detoxification process can happen in a more smooth way without a lot of the detoxification side effects that some kids will have. So there's many different approaches. Different herbal supplements can be very great. Milk thistle is one herb that supports the liver in both of its detoxification phases. So I'll pass this on to Julie and Dave to talk more.
Dr. Trevor, what are some of your detox protocol?
Well, that's a loaded question because unlike some practitioners, I don't actually have one way to go. I think Dr. Song has said it very nicely, and Julie as well. You know, there is no cookie cutter, and in medicine, unfortunately, whether it's spoken or not, at large, we as physicians are often taught this is what you do when you face this situation. And there's a reason for that in general, but in these kids, when it comes to detoxification, we cannot subscribe to that approach. So I do use some of the sulfated detoxifying agents, DMSA, DMPS. I do use EDTA. I use both oral. I use rectal routes. I have tried transdermal. It has been disappointing. I have not seen the kind of results either clinically or on laboratory data that I would have liked to have seen. And so on those two parameters, both clinical and labs, I expect to see some advancement. When I see nothing, I regroup with my parents and I say it's time to try a different route. I also use natural things like chlorella. Some people know it as NDF. I've heard great things about PCRX. I've heard I personally use zeolites, which are being studied on a national protocol with an IRB. That's very unique, Investigation Review Board. So it's a double-blind trial. That's wonderful to know that we were looking into that. So I do use a lot of these different protocols to try on these kids based on what they respond with. We go forward.
I'm realizing I have about 10 minutes left, and I've got a whole bunch more questions that I want to delve into with you guys. But let's just move to this broader subject of biochemistry, and that there's certain things that you're noticing, certain components of functionality that you're seeing that are consistent, glutamate receptors. I don't exactly know it all, but I'd like you to just give me just, you know, a few synthesized minutes on your take on what's going on biochemically with these children and how diet can help impact that. You know, where can, you know, what's sort of the bottom line?
There is a large controversy in our midst about glutamate. Very rarely does any parent want to give their child MSG, monosodium glutamate. If you look, and I'll leave Julie to this one, if you look in foods, a lot of the labels called natural flavorings or natural flavors, these can be pseudonyms for monosodium glutamate. What we found from my angle is that there's a disturbing body of evidence afoot that excessive stimulation by glutamate on a certain kind of receptor in nerves, neurons, called the NMDA, I don't want to get too technical, can result, bottom line, in nerve degeneration and cell death. This is well documented. It's not up for grabs. And the disturbing connector is that on, I don't know how many of my children, I'm guesstimating easily over 50%, come back with extraordinarily high glutamate levels in the blood and in the urine. We well know that there is no one test that can follow glutamate levels 100% accurately in terms of what the brain is exposed to, but it's very disturbing to see these, and for that reason, I strongly suggest my parents to stay away from any foods that contain MSG that has been synthetically added. Julie, anything you want to say on that?
Yeah, so a couple of those, you know, it's easy to read a label and see if it says monosodium glutamate or MSG on there, but companies are getting savvy that people don't want MSG in their food, so they start playing this funny game where the FDA says if an ingredient has less than 50% MSG, you don't have to list it as MSG. In fact, you can say it contains no MSG. So there's a bunch of these little added ingredients that are about 40% MSG that people have no idea. These are things like hydrolyzed vegetable protein, hydrolyzed soy protein, autolyzed yeast extracts, things like that, that are often hidden sources of MSG. So looking at the label and reading it can really be helpful for people in eliminating some of those sources that are that they're not aware of.
In terms of some of the other biochemical pathways that can be affected, Julie already mentioned the sulfation pathways, and she's written a great book on autism treatments that mentions the sulfation pathways in detail, which I would highly recommend that you read as an introduction. But we also know that there are many other pathways, the biochemical pathways in the liver, phase 1 and phase 2 detoxification pathways. When we can understand which of these pathways are affected, we can target our interventions, give the appropriate amino acids, glycine, glutathione, some other homeopathic remedies that I mentioned. There's also mitochondrial dysfunction. Now, what are mitochondria? They are the little powerhouses of every single one of our cells that makes ATP, the little energy blocks that our body needs to do everything. And so many of these kids are not producing enough ATP to do the work that their cells need to do. So a simple supplement like coenzyme Q10 can be helpful for these kids. We can also measure different levels of free radical damage. Many of you have heard about free radicals, but free radical damage, we can see that the kids have a lot of free radicals in their systems that can be mopped up with something as simple as vitamin C and vitamin E. Immune dysfunction, we already talked about. Many of these kids have disordered immune markers, natural killer cell activity is low, and we can measure these, and we can give targeted approaches like using arabinogalactan, which is an essential sugar that supports natural killer cell activity. We can also use things like medicinal mushrooms or homeopathic remedies or echinacea. So again, we can measure the biochemical reactions as we learn more and more about the genetics and the biochemistry of autism. We'll be able to target even better our approach.
Essentially, the take-home message for our listeners is that there is absolutely something you only can do but should attempt to invoke for your child. The average encounter with the medical establishment does not promote a proactive position for the parents, and not only the supplements that Dr. Song mentioned, but a number of others can be, tried with these children. Most of them are very harmless, very natural, and compared to most of the drugs and medications that we've been using, there's just no comparison, frankly. They need to be attempted.
Nothing speaks broader than results and impact for a client, for a child, for a family. Can you each speak just briefly about, what either a specific anecdote or just generally speaking, the kind of results that you see?
Sure. I'll just give one example. And, of course, every child is different, but I will give an example of something that was quite effective. So I had I have a 2.5-year-old in my practice, and he didn't have any language. And we took out gluten and casein, and in the course of 3 months, he now has 100 words. When he had zero before that. So to me, that's huge. And the parents were really, obviously, very thrilled with how quickly he responded to something so simple as that. So sometimes a simple thing can make a huge difference. And then sometimes it's little step by little step by little step that we unravel, piece after piece.
I would agree with Julie that sometimes you see these remarkable, remarkable results. There's one child that I have who the biggest struggle was to change the diet. And as Julie knows, many of these kids are so picky, and really altering their diets in any way can be really frightening for parents. And that's where someone like Julie is so helpful to help navigate, the dietary changes that need to happen. And so for this one particular child, just the single act of taking out casein resulted in immediately, within that week, improved language, putting together words in a meaningful way, less hyperactivity, even though we had for a couple of months before that added other supplements, which helped, but nothing quite as dramatic as just taking out the casein. Other kids, again, it's a little bit more step by step. And so there's one child who in my practice who really the biggest difference using homeopathics has been the aggression and the tantrums, really quite a significant drop in the tantrums, much more cooperative in therapies, happier, not screaming, not moving around so much in bed and just being so restless and better eye contact. So for him, it was mostly not so much language right away, but really the calming effect, which I think for a lot of parents is really reassuring to not have so many of those tantrums.
I tell you right now, everybody's different, that you're probably getting tired of hearing that, but I have a bell curve distribution. I'd love to say everyone gets better. I think that it's important to note that some children are more stodgy. They don't move easily. Others seem to respond very quickly. I've been asked to share about that, and so I will. The one of the few kids that came to me very early in my practice, of a girl. Most of these are boys, but this little girl came to me. She was about 4 years of age, and she had no words. She couldn't look at you in the eye. She was everywhere in the room. I think my parents understand what when I say that. They're just always on the move, and it was very distressing for the family. This family went to work, and long story made short is, after instituting supplements, the diet, a gluten-free, casein-free diet, a yeast reduction diet as necessary, this girl is now basically fooling people as, I guess the word is mainstream, neurotypical, whatever word you want to use. I still believe there are biochemical issues these children face that behavior will not always address, but I think that it's very gratifying for parents to see their children, quote unquote, be back in society, back in the mainstream, and that's very wonderful.
I want to thank all of you for being here today. We've been sitting here with Julie Matthews, certified nutrition consultant, Dr. Elisa Song. She is a medical doctor specializing in pediatrics, and Dr. David Traver, who is a board certified pediatrician, speaking about biomedical and treatments of the actual of the body and physiology of these autistic children, which is a completely different discussion than behavioral interventions. And we're speaking about autism treatment, and I implore anyone to
anyone who knows anybody with an autistic child to have them listen to this show and take in the data and to look into any of all of your work to learn more about, you know, what's really going on here and what all of their options are with respect to treatment for their children. So if we could just please find out, just quickly, Dr. Song, how can folks find out more about you and reach you?
So my office is in Belmont. Mm-hmm. My phone number is 650-595-KIDS or 650-595-5437. I also have a webpage, which is rudimentary at this point, but it's www.wholechildwellness.com. That's W-H-O-L-E, childwellness.com.
And Dr. Draver?
I practice in Foster City, and my phone number is 650-341-5300. I have a website as well, and that is www.d, P as in Peter, T as in Traver, dptmd.com.
And Julie?
People can find more at healthfulliving.org. And if you want to go straight to the autism page, it's healthfulliving.org/autism.
And folks can read more about your book at nourishinghope.com.
Yes, and if they want to call me, it's 415-437-6807.
We can definitely go on for more, and we'll have to do more shows on this topic because it's clearly near and dear to my heart. There's so many children out there and families that need assistance and need to be hearing, you know, really the full spectrum of what's out there to learn and understand. So you can listen to this show and any past show at realitysandwichradio.com. This has been Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich. We'll be back next Thursday at noon. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco. This show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com, where you can also read about upcoming shows. To learn more about Julie Matthews or Martin Matthews, go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.